sipping. My stomach gurgles, and I cough in an effort to smother the sound, though not before Khan raises a brow and flicks me a look I ignore. Wish I wasn't so hungry. Feels wrong accepting a meal from somebody I eventually intend to kill and behead, just to be safe. He ladles two clay bowls full of the soup, hearty curls of steam wafting off the top of each lumpy pour. My gut makes another one of those gurgling sounds, my cheeks burning as he settles a copper spoon in the bowl and slides the meal in my direction. He places another on my right, lowers himself onto the stool beside me, and begins spooning the meal into his mouth. My gaze bounces between his profile, my bowl, my spoon, my rope-bound wrists. Right. I maneuver the spoon's handle into my incompetent grip, discovering that if I tip my arms to the right, I can actually scoop the soup at an angle that should be accessible to my mouth. Should. I lift a small serving from the bowl, leaning forward. My fingers fumble, sloshing it everywhere. Teeth gritted, I try again, this time bringing it halfway to my wide-open mouth, tongue lolling before the utensil wobbles from my grip, splatting my arms and chest with soup. My spoon clatters to the ground, along with the remaining drabs of my patience. I make to move off the stool, but Khan grips my shoulder as if to keep me in place. I whip my head around and sink my teeth into his forearm so fast I barely register it happening until it's done. Until the taste of his blood is in my mouth and he has me on my feet, backed against a wall with his thigh shoved between mine, with my hands pinned above my head and his hand clutched around my jaw. Our bodies are flush, breath sawing through our bared teeth. Our noses and foreheads collide as the remaining light is wicked from the room, the only source now spilling from the stove's kindled belly, making Khan look like an angry shadow poured over me, his eyes crackling embers glinting in the gloom.
You want to play rough, Moonbeam? We can play rough, but only after you eat.
Is that a command, sire? I swear the ruddy specks in his eyes flare, his body a strong, resonant force pressed against me. Too hot. Not hot enough.
There's a difference between being cared for and being commanded. Know it.
I chuff a humorless laugh, notching my chin forward. You give me a bowl of soup and expect me to eat it with bound hands? Your perception of caring is warped. Can't believe I'm thinking this, but I miss my shackles. Or more to the point, the chain draped between them. At least I could do things, like stretch and scratch. My wrists are bound so close together that wiping my ass is going to be an experience when I finally make it to the privy.
Try being open to accepting aid, Rafe. You'd be amazed at how the grain no longer chafes. A simple request for my help doesn't make you weak. It makes you real.
I open my mouth to tell him I don't want the help of a tyrant Vagor king when my stomach gurgles again, casting its unwanted vote. Something loud and rancorous unleashes upon the roof, a thundering assault unlike anything I've ever heard. My heart leaps into my throat, gaze ripping from Khan's and darting around the room, searching for cracks in the walls since the building is obviously crumbling. Did a moon fall? Shouldn't we be running, hiding under the table? Why the fuck is he so calm?
It's just a heavy rainstorm,
he rumbles, his voice a tender stroke to my hackled heart. My body loosens. Oh, it's very loud, I say, still hunting the walls for cracks. Are you certain it's not a moonfall?
Positive. You are safe.
I meet his cinder stare. Debatable.
You are safe.
Because you need me for something. They always do. What is it? Might as well get it out in the open now, don't you think? Expectations really pinch when they stab you in the back. He frowns.
All I want from you is for you to eat your fucking soup, and maybe for us to get through this slumber without any more bloodshed, a concept I'm aware you struggle with.
My eyes narrow, seeking the fissures in his stare, finding only stone-hard conviction. You're a good liar. I'll give you that. A growl boils in his chest, and he releases my wrists, stepping back. For some strange reason, it feels almost like ripping a seam open, my breath shuddering free. He turns on his heel, picks up my spoon, rinses it under the tap, then sets it back in my bowl. Settling on his stool, he continues to eat in stoic silence, such a contrast to the battering of rain on the roof. The air grows tighter by the second. My gaze nips to the bite wound on his arm, blood dripping on the ground, still slicked across my lips. I cringe. I bled him in his ma's home. Damn it. And dropped soup everywhere. Turns out, I'm a shit house guest. Another grumbling belly gurgle, and I think of my beautiful, fallen Essie. She often baked for us, loved experimenting with all the different foods I'd bring home from the markets. I always thanked her, appreciating her efforts. I'm almost certain I didn't thank Khan when he slid me the meal. Just began wrangling my spoon after watching him prepare it from my somewhat relaxed perch on the stool. Wow, I'm a really, really shit house guest. No matter how much I dislike the male and everything he stands for, I should at least show my gratitude for the fragrant meal he cooked for us both, and persevere with trying to get some into my mouth. With a deep sigh, I push off the wall and settle back on my stool, still wearing his blood on my face as I say, "Sorry for being disrespectful. And thank you for this meal. I appreciate the effort you put into it." He pauses, spoon mid-scoop.
"It's my pleasure, Rafe."
I nod, toss my hair over my shoulder with a swish of my head, flick him a shy glance, then lean forward, pucker my lips, and shove my face in the bowl, sucking a long slurp of broth. A moan slips out. This is delicious. Not too rich or salty. Subtle notes of whatever herbs he threw in here. There's even the hint of something citrus. Don't know what, but I like it. I'm just swallowing my second glorious mouthful when Khan erupts, his deep, gravelly laugh loud enough to battle the clamorous sky. My cheeks heat, and I almost snap at him again. But then his laughter weaves a thick ribbon beneath my ribs that flutters up my throat and bursts from my mouth so fast it also spurts from my nose with a spray of soup that coats the butcher block. My nostrils burn like I just snorted flames, but the laughter keeps coming, my entire body shaking from the force of it. I've never laughed like this before. Not truly. I didn't know it could feel this good. Why does it feel so good? Tears streak my cheeks. Soup drips from my nose and chin. My guts ache as my sound continues to spill. And spill. It takes me a while to realize the male next to me has gone quiet. My laughter tapers, face muscles loosening. I unscrunch my eyes, looking sidelong at Khan. My heart stills. He's watching me with a haunting intensity that threatens to peel off one of the many calluses crusting my heart. A look that presses against my chest. My soul. The sort of look that buckles spines, heartstrings, and knees in the same swift strike. The air between us hollows, hungry for something I certainly don't have the substance to fill. And I realize I might have been wrong about him. That he doesn't want me for my affinity with Claude or Balder, or the ease with which I slay, that he wants something much, much worse. Me. Just me. Don't do that. I bite out.
Do what?
Pretend we're cozy. We're not. I don't know you. You don't know me. I'm plotting your death as we speak. A tick in his jaw pulses, something flashing in his eyes that chills me to the bone.
Of course.
I clear my throat, break from his gaze, and sink my stare into my soup. Another beat of chest-cracking silence before he reaches for a cloth on the bench and uses it to wipe my face. I don't stop him. I don't stop him from grabbing my spoon and feeding me like a youngling. I don't stop him from ladling another serving he also feeds me before offering me a mug of water freshly poured from the tap. I don't stop him from wiping the soup from my shirt once we're done, from leading me up the crooked staircase, through a skewed wooden door that's high on one side, short on the other, and into a cozy sleep space with a single lopsided window and a large pallet topped with enough cushions and covers to drown in. A sleep space that smells like him.
The only exit is down the stairs and out the back door. That's if you can creep past me quietly enough, since I'll be sleeping on the cedar. If you succeed, I'll enjoy hunting you down, so be my fucking guest.
Privy?
Through there.
He points to another much smaller, more oddly shaped door as a burst of lightning ignites his beautiful, barbaric face in frightening undertones. I lift my bound hands.
How am I supposed to—
I'm sure you'll work it out,
he mutters, then closes the doors so hard I jump. Rave. Chapter 35. I nudge at the scale pressed between my bound wrists until it flops onto my lap, then pinch it between my knees and get to work. Gaze homed on the door, I rub my rope across the tapered edge, severing the twirls of twine in fraying increments. It cuts through much faster than I was anticipating, my hand slipping as the rope gives way. The scale slices into my arm and I suck a sharp breath, clamping my jaw against the slit of pain. Shit. Fuck. Dragon balls. Damn it, Rave. I use my teeth to unravel my binds before pressing a hand on the cut, blood leaching through the gaps between my fingers and dribbling onto the palate. I sigh. Guess I broke the no more bloodshed this slumber rule. Definitely time to kick myself out. I rush into the washroom and crank the copper faucet barely visible in the dull light, dragging my arm beneath the gushing flow and doing what I can to clean off the blood. Tearing a strip from my shirt, I bind the wound, using my teeth to tie off the knot before smiling at my handiwork, victory popping beneath my ribs in giddy bursts. I might have wounded myself, but I'm free. Free. Fuck yes. Now I just have to get away. I use the privy, lavishing in the freedom of being able to wipe my ass comfortably. Tucking my hair behind my ears, I move back into the sleep space, nipping another glance at the still-closed door. Drawn to the drawers at the end of the pallet, I pry the first open and rummage for something more comfortable than the scratchy garments I thought I'd die in, finding a black shirt that's butter soft. I pull out some equally soft pants that are short enough they likely cut off at Khan's knees. They'll probably still swallow me. Shrugging, I tug them on anyway, discovering they have a drawstring that allows me to cinch them at my waist. I keep my hair tucked beneath the oversized shirt now hanging off my shoulder as I creep back onto the pallet. Pulling the blankets up around myself despite the humid heat, I stash the scale and severed binds beneath the covers while I watch the door. Giving Khan time to fall asleep, I wait, entombed in the smell of cream and molten stone. The storm howls, dumping rain upon the roof, pelting against the little window. the space dark and gloomy as I bide my time, picking at the skin down the side of my nails, picturing all the gory things I'm going to do to the male who killed Essie and slashed my back to shreds. I'm coming for you, Rex Zaros. You fuck. But first, I have to escape a king. I edge the door open, my breath soft and steady, mind calm, sunken into that quiet place I go when I have a job to do. With the scale clutched in my right hand, I make for the stairs, timing my movements to the ferocious beat of the storm lashing against the dwelling, dragging my left hand down the wall to steady myself. I descend toward the ground floor, movements soft and slow, four steps from the bottom when a bolt of lightning ignites the room. Ignites him. My cheeks heat, thunder rumbling as I consume the vision of Khan Vagor stretched across the long cedar. Naked. More lightning, and I see the fluffy throw draped across his groin, covering that part of his body but leaving his scars and his fierce, formidable stature on bold display. Creators. He's so big, his legs hang off the end, feet flat on the ground, legs partially spread. Another thump of thunder, and I swallow thickly, gaze dragging up to where he has a pillow beneath his head that's tipped to the side, both arms tucked beneath it. I shake my head, admiring. I had a lot of time to think while I was sitting in his sleep space, bound in his scent, biding moments until I was certain he'd be asleep. Realized he's shown me kindness when I've shown him none. Certainly done nothing to deserve his. And the way he looked at me while I laughed. I release a slow, silent breath, taking in the relaxed slant of his face. Peaceful. Serene. My fingers itch, but not with the need to kill. Not the feeling I get when I think about the male I'm about to hunt. They itch with the need to touch. To trace the sturdy lines of his eyebrows, then his nose, ever so slightly crooked. As though somebody punched him one time and he didn't bother to set it completely straight. The urge to tangle with his thick beard and tug at the strands, then drag across the broad expanse of his shoulders, smoothing across his bouldered chest, to trace the dips between his abdominals, down the slick black trail of hair that leads beneath that blanket. My cheeks flush with another spread of heat. Of all the things I've seen in my life, he's one of the most magnificent. I can admit that to myself now that we're parting. Another reason why I need to go. Perhaps he's a good male. A good, honorable king. I don't have the heart to peel back the layers and find out. I'm broken in ways he'll never understand. Condemned to a lonely existence I've found peace with. So no, I don't want to kill him. Not anymore. I simply want to be free of him. I spear my gaze at the door and ease off the final few steps, tiptoeing past the cedar. My hand is just settling around the doorknob when my mind tills up the haunting echo of his previous words. Ones I'd barely absorbed when he'd said them because I was so caught up on other things.
The only exit is down the stairs and out the back door. That's if you can creep past me quietly enough, since I'll be sleeping on the cedar. If you succeed, I'll enjoy hunting you down, so be my fucking guest.
A shiver rakes through me as I digest the conviction in his tone, crippled by the distinct impression that not even a moonfall would prevent him from finding me. Gaze cast over my shoulder, my heart misses a beat. Another. Shit. I have to kill him. If I don't, I'll never be rid of him. He'll haunt me. Truly haunt me. Just as he promised. This weird feeling gouges at my throat. like a claw reaching up through layers of flesh, muscle, and sinew, fisting my trachea, tightening its grip, choking me. I realize with a start that it's hesitation. Again. I don't know what to do with this. I've never dealt with it before this male came along. I kill. That's what I do. Somebody needs taking out, I fucking do it. This decision should be easy. He's in the way. Get him out of the way. Why is it not easy? I squeeze my eyes shut, pitching myself back to the moment I discovered he's one of the three Vagor kings, to the rage I felt, bolstered by the knowledge of all the terrible things he's rumored to have done. Monstrous things. Heinous things that are unforgivable. The world will be a better place with one less tyrannical Vagor brother. Yes, that's it. That's the hook. I snap my mouth around the thought's sharp point as I slip inside myself, stripping back the sprouting emotions I feel for Khan until I'm left with a bare skeleton I leave lying on my internal shore, bundling all my budding curiosity and tentative appreciation and tying it to a stone. With stout determination, I creep across my lake, shards of silver light spearing up from beneath the ice like something bright and bold is soaring through the water, following me. I shiver, plunk the stone down a carved hole and into the dark expanse, then brush off my hands. There. Good riddance. The huge, luminous presence darts forward in a whip of motion, appearing to chase the stone like a predator hunting its prey, its glow fading into the depths with a billowing swish that sends icy water gushing up the hole and sloshing around my feet. Breath caught in my lungs, I blink back to the now, heart pounding hard and fast. It's never chased something I've discarded before. At least not that I've noticed. A shiver scurries up my spine, and I shake my head, centering myself, ignoring whatever just happened. Do the job. Get out. Hunt Rek Zaros. Cradling a stark indifference toward my sleeping target, I creep closer to the cedar, Rygun's scale clutched in my steady hand. In one swift motion, I straddle the king, scoring the sharp weapon to his throat. Khan's eyes pop open, glowing like pots of crackling embers as my internal lake erupts, the complex bundle of discarded emotions spat back at me, splatting against my heart, where it sinks between the gaps, leeching toward my fleshy core. A gasp, speared through by the fire in Khan's eyes, by the pierce of feeling that just infected me like a disease, 10 times more potent than it was when I threw it away. A whimper wrangles free as I repress the urge to delve my hand between my ribs, goring a hole in my chest cavity, to scratch the thumping organ like it's an insect bite, or maybe wedge my fingers deep and scoop out this sensation. Heavy. Swollen. Alive. His nostrils flare, gaze flicking to my injured arm, back to my eyes while breath saw in and out of me, while I poke at my crippled resolve, trying to work out why my desire to kill him just melted into a puddle of desperation to be closer. Not just closer. As close as we can be. This strangest need to kiss him surges through my veins, for us to clash against each other until we fuse in intangible ways, to taste him and feel him move inside me. A luscious, hungry shudder crawls up my spine. Another flash of lightning ignites the fierceness in his stare, and his chest deflates, like all the breath just shoved from his lungs. Slower than a rising aurora, he pulls his arms from beneath the pillow, one strong hand settling on my hip, gripping hard. The other settles around the side of my face, cupping it in a way that feels so jarringly familiar. So right, it makes me want to crack my aching heart into shards because it's obviously confused.
I see you, Rafe.
My breath hitches, the scale still indenting Khan's throat. I don't know what—
You,
he growls, tightening his hand around the side of my face with a tender jerk, eyes lit with a soul-crushing blaze.
I fucking see you.
His voice is a jagged wound, raw and grisly, painful in a way that makes that sensation in my chest ache with a deeper, more destructive throb I'm so desperate to dislodge, or at the very least distract myself from. It's too real, too piercing. And this, why does this feel so right? The room ignites again, illuminating him in devastating detail. Strong, proud body slashed in too many scars to count. Hair mussed, lips a perfect, pillowy shape I imagine pressed against mine, moving with mine, claiming mine. Fuck.
What do you need, Moonbeam?
To scratch this primal itch in the hopes it'll assuage the emotional blade now lodged in my chest. With fumbled motions, I reach for my waistband, untethering the bind and loosening the cinched material before grabbing his hand that's sitting on my hip and urging it down the front of me. A rumbling sound spawns in his chest, vibrating up my spread legs where it meets my tender core now pulsing with a hungry beat. A sensation I intend to fall into, head first with a blindfold on.
You want me to touch you?
The words are a flint scored down my spine. Lower. My muscles loosen, making my flesh heat as I nod, the motion fast and desperate. Yes, I plead, grinding my hips, trying to rock myself against his fingers that aren't quite where I want them. Please. He growls, his thick manhood swelling beneath my ass, growing impossibly hard. Another grind of my hips ignites every nerve in that sensitive spot between my legs, and I groan, this deep, heady sound that's like a wanton fracture in the room. Khan pushes his hand closer toward my aching center, making my flesh pebble, my nipples pinching into hard, sensitive peaks from the coarse feel of his skin against my needy softness. I throb with anticipation, knowing he's close. So close. Another hitch of my breath as his finger sweeps across my wet flesh, the tender tease zapping me with a ravenous bolt of pleasure.
Cut me if you want me to stop,
he rasps, his thumb sliding across my cheekbone.
I'll gladly bleed beneath you, so don't be shy.
Touch me, I groan, my voice shrill with a neediness I don't recognize. Not in myself. His fingers skim my stretched expanse, feathering around my flushed, swollen slit. My mind muddies, empties, another deep, heady groan pouring up my throat. He makes a gravelly sound as he traces a path around me, slow, steady circles that wind me up and unravel me in the same luscious motion. His other hand drops from my face and weaves beneath my stolen shirt, palming my aching breast, tweaking my nipple, sending zings of electric pleasure through all my fine ligaments. Fuck. I let my head tip back, bottom lip tucked between my teeth. Surrender to his ministrations. More, I groan, and he pinches the sensitive peak. I gasp, my attention tuned to my breasts, then struck with a bolt of shock when he sinks two fingers into me. I moan to the slashing sky as he pumps them deep, then stills, holds them there. Another flick of my nipple, another zing of pleasure that pours into my throbbing core.
Take what you want, Moonbeam.
The words till something inside me, my mind drifting somewhere bright and breezy. A dream, maybe. Somewhere that smells like salt, spices, and sweet, succulent flowers. A place where the only thing that matters is this. Us. I snap from the luminous tendril of thought woven up from beneath my icy lake. Desperate to scrub that beautiful, impossible feeling of rightness from my chest, I chase the pulse of rapture between my spread thighs, a heady, primal distraction that I can make sense of. I need you, I groan, tossing the scale aside, hearing it clatter across the ground. Now.
You fucking have me.
No, I need you, I growl, trying to tip us sideways. Seeming to catch on, he makes this throaty sound, and in one swift, powerful motion, he flips us, making my breath catch. He shoves my pants down and tosses them aside, my legs now splayed beneath him. Flushed core bared, aching and ready to take his thick, hard length now resting against the inside of my naked thigh. I'm just about to reach down and grab him, to guide him toward my throbbing entrance, when I catch him looking at me with the intensity of a chapped wasteland desperate for even a drop of rain. The sort of look that consumes, that clutches heartstrings and braids them together for eternity, forever bonded. Can't he see that my heartstrings are stubby and frayed? He grips my leg with one of his calloused hands, right up by my knee, widening me. The other comes up and cups the side of my face with captivating tenderness, his thumb dragging back and forth across my parted lips. My pulse slows, stills. He's so beautiful, poured over me like molten lava. So fucking beautiful that it's tempting to let him fall into the illusion I think he's woven over me, over us. To take him into my body and give him a little bit of what he's so obviously seeking in my eyes.
Are you sure you want this, Moonbeam?
The deep, gravelly words are coarse and sharp, yet somehow not. Somehow they're the softest words I've ever heard. Cut me if you want me to stop. Take what you want. Are you sure you want this, Moonbeam? Creators. He's definitely not the monster I thought he was. Certain, I rasp, tilting my hips to offer him better access. I want you in me, Khan Vakor. He groans, lids lowering as he looks at me with another tender crush of intensity that overrides that ache between my legs, makes the one in my chest flare with renewed vigor, and I'm suddenly sure a hand just plunged down my throat, punched through the side of my esophagus, and gripped my stony heart. He fists himself, lining himself up with me as I say, "But first you have to stop looking at me like it means something." He flinches, as if struck with the metal tip of a barbed whip.
You want a meaningless release?
I nod, jerking my hips.
Right.
Another flash of lightning, and I see his eyes have shuttered black.
Well, you won't find that here, Prisoner 73.
His voice is monotone, detached, severed from whatever this is. He eases back onto his knees, dropping my leg, leaving me open and exposed, his thick manhood standing strong and proud and ready, webbed in veins, a pearly bead of pre-cum leaking from the tip. He pushes his hair back from his face, lips pinched into a tight line while confusion wrestles beneath my ribs. Is he joking? He's ready. Wanting. I'm here, asking for it. Why not just get it out of our system so we can move on? I blink, gaze lifting to his eyes, mine wide. What are you—
Get up and go back to your sleep space. Get some rest. We have a long, non-stop ride when the storm clears.
there's such a chill in his tone that for a moment I don't breathe, don't move. I open my mouth.
Get the fuck up.
His words rumble through the room with such violence, I'm certain I'm going to be crushed beneath them if I don't move. Fast. I scramble off the cedar and snatch my discarded pants, clutching them close to my chest as I edge back toward the stairs, maintaining our eye contact while my cheeks flame with a shame I don't understand. Don't want to understand. With a shake of my head, I spin and sprint up the staircase to the drum of the thunderous storm. Rave. Chapter 36. I slam the door behind myself and lean against it, lungs heaving, heart galloping, still flushed and wanting between my trembling legs. What the flying fuck was that? I toss my hair back off my face, groaning at the smell of him now staining my fingertips, like he seeped through my pores and melded with me, creating an aroma that's so carnally us. And it smells good. So damn good that part of me wants to dash back down those stairs right now and apologize. Let him fuck me like it means something. Let him beneath my skin. The stupid part. A flash of lightning ignites the room, and my stare narrows on the illuminated window being lashed at by the storm, head tipping to the side as a roll of thunder rattles the pane. I'm small enough to fit through that. Just. Actually, this side of the dwelling supports a trellis perfectly convenient for me to use as a ladder. Thank you, little crooked home. I smile and shove off the door, crossing the room as I step into my short pants and cinch them at the waist, tucking my shirt in so there's less of me to catch a snag. I may not be able to bring myself to kill Khan Vagor, but I still need to get away. Far, far away, before any more damage is done. I climb onto the raised pallet, then onto the side table. Reaching the window, I glance over my shoulder at the door before I pry open the latch and push the pane wide. The storm is drumming the roof like 1,000 flat hands, a booming diversion for what little sound manages to squeeze from the window's hinges. Threading my arm through the hole, I grip the trellis and haul myself out into the deluge, feet tingling with a flush of paranoia. I don't have time to dwell on the strange sensation of heavy raindrops pelting my skin as I wriggle free of the sleep space. Get out. Get out. Get out. I grip the knobbly trellis, trying to avoid the lush, fruit-laden foliage as I clamber down, drenched by the time I drop onto the sodden soil that squelches between my toes. A small zap of victory pulses through my veins, and I sprint for the jungle path, my heart pounding in rhythm with the angry storm. I'm out. I'm free. Now to put some distance between us. My mind flashes to a different time, a different place, when I was escaping somewhere vile during a storm of a different variety, darting through eddies of snow that stuck to my hair and threatened to crust my lashes shut. Hard to ignore this stark difference. Then, I was running from a place of pain, starvation, and suffering. Now, I'm running from a place of pleasure, wholesome meals, and deep belly laughs. Don't think about it. This is right. This is right. All that good stuff is not for you. I repeat it to myself with every splashing step through puddles and over fallen logs. The jungle's dense foliage seeming to swallow me as I trace the path we took to get here while the storm shrieks and shudders. Slowing, I emerge before the clearing Rygun landed upon earlier, relieved to see the beast hasn't returned. Sheets of rain fall around me, and I cast my gaze right, taking in the steep cliff that fringes the plateau. If I run that way, there are only so many places I can go. And with a warrior king intent on hunting me, likely familiar with these mountains,
I'll be caught in no time. But if I climb down, I can follow the river all the way to the wall. I'll have a constant supply of drinking water, a delightful view of the River Acht, shade coverage from the shoreline trees. What more could I want? I dash to the left, taking a moment to stare down the cliff and map my chosen pathway. Creators, I mutter. The cliff is a vertical drop that levels onto another plateau, cradling a churning basin fed into from the now heaving waterfall. The pool spills over the edge, down another cliff, where it feeds into a second basin far below, the one I saw when we first flew in. Though it looks nothing like it did then. Now it's a swollen catchment gushing into the gorge with hazardous force. I wince. This is not ideal, but it's this or the cliff behind me and a probable dead end. The rainfall tapers a little, a single shaft of light splitting through the bulbous clouds above. I shrug, taking it as a sign. Turning, I push my iron cuff farther up my arm so it won't get in the way, cutting a glance toward the jungle walkway before I fold into a crouch. I ease my feet over the edge, find a foothold in the stone, and drop, swallowing the heart-plummeting sensation that always ensues the moment I'm hanging off the edge of something treacherous. The stone is slippery, but sturdy enough that I'm able to climb in semi-confident increments, making my movements swift and methodical. Nearing the bottom of the cliff, I leap the final few feet, landing upon the grassy plateau. I run toward the edge of the pool to see angry water lapping at the sides, though it's still a few feet off from challenging the bank's generous easements. Should be fine. For a moment, I watch the heaving waterfall shoveling over the edge with such roaring might it's hard not to marvel. Rain's an exquisite creator. Such a dominant force. I turn, just easing over the cliff's edge when a flutter of movement snatches my gaze. A flock of tawny birds ripping from the jungle, squawking as they shoot skyward. My heart leaps into my throat. Birds don't fly during storms. Everybody knows that. They hunker down. Hide. Did something spook them? A deep seed of knowing sinks into my chest, riddling me with blazing roots of adrenaline. He's coming. Shit. I begin to clamber down the cliff, not bothering to check my hand placements, tearing up my fingers and feet with the frenzy of my frazzled descent. If Khan finds me, there's no way I'm getting free again. He won't take his creator's damn eyes off me. A terrible creaking sound fissures the air, and I look up in time to see an explosion of water, a gushing torrent of froth and stones and torn-out trees pouring toward me so fast I barely have time to pull a breath before I'm struck, ripped from the wall. Something hard collides with my head. Darkness. Diary entry. Elowen Nevan. Age 18 phases. 5,039 phases after stone. They came for me while I was sleeping, curled beneath the furs in Ma and Pa's pallet, like I did when I was sick, where they'd sing me songs that always made me feel better. They came for me, an entourage of beaded guards from the Burn, the Fade, and the neutral city of Balthaim, residents of the Tri-Council. They must have known I'd put up a fight despite my weakened state, because they shot me with an iron pin before I'd even opened my eyes. Cowardly fucks. They allowed me to gather a single bag of belongings before I was veiled, shackled in iron, and escorted from the sleep suite. Ma and Pa's aides must have fought, because they were also bound, on their knees, being guarded along the corridors as I was led outside to where a thunder of molten maws were perched along Arithia's walls, upon the rooftops of Arithia's buildings and gusting through the sky, blowing their orange flames and making the city folk scream. I'm told they didn't come to conquer my kingdom, that they're simply helping to ward it until I'm able to bind with the male who's been chosen for me by the Tri-Council. Tyroth fucking Vagor. One of King Ostern's three sons. The one with cruel eyes. The male pup promised he wouldn't trade me to for all the grain in the world. I screamed at them, told them I'd rather rot. Earned a smack to the side of the head by one of the Burn's barbed guards. Everything went black for a bit. I came to on the back of the biggest Molten Maw I'd ever seen, Slotra trailing us all the way to the Imperial Fortress near the Fade's capital where we're to spend this slumber, screeching without pause. Now I can't drift off, can't do a thing but stare out the window, nurse this chest full of grief, and watch Slotra flick through the colorful clouds, throwing icy flames while my escort Molten Maws keep trying to herd her back toward the shadows of the shade. Once the aurora rises, we're set to soar across the Boltanic Plains, straight on to Dom, the Burn's elusive capital, where I'm to spend the next three phases biding time until I come of coronation age, after which Tyroth and I are to be bound. Until then, it would be uncouth for me to be living under the same ceiling as the male now charged with running my kingdom. My kingdom. Earlier, while I was slumped here watching Slotra tear three Molten Maws from the sky and fry the feathers of many more, the Fade's young queen came to visit me in my guest chamber, offered to remove the iron pin from my thigh. We spoke in hushed tones as she worked, and she apologized for the actions of her male, King Cadoc Vagor, who offered his aid to the Tri-Council and sent their thunder of mercenary Molten Maws to secure me. I got the feeling she regrets that she let the male slither into her sleep space, conceiving a youngling who forced them into a binding that tied the Burn and the Fade together in a secure knot. I took my veil off and let her see my face, gaunt as it is. She wrapped me in a warm, sturdy embrace, reminding me that there's still some good in the world. Together, we watched Slotra wage a lonely war until the queen was done mending my wound and retired to her chambers. Still, I rest on the windowsill ruined against my escape and pray to Claude despite the chilling silence brought on by these cuffs of iron. I beg her to tell Slotra to fight her battle this slumber, but once the aurora rises, to turn around, to return to Erythia, curl up in the hutch, and wait for me. Moonplumes don't survive in the sun, and I can't lose her. My heart can't take another hit. I'd rather die than watch her turn to stone.
Rave. Chapter 38. Cold water splashes my face, sloshing me to consciousness. An unrelenting thump in my temple makes me wonder if I've cracked my skull. Rushing water drags at my legs while I cling to something round, my arms draped over the curve of it, cheek pressed against its gnarled surface. Probably a tree. I must have had enough wherewithal at some stage to grip hold of something buoyant and save myself from certain drowning. That's nice. I pry my eyes open to a smear of orange water and blue sky above that's threaded with a midday aurora. Sheer, rusty cliffs press in on either side of the river I'm currently bobbing along at a rapid pace. A gorge, but it doesn't look like the one we flew through to get to the dwelling. Meaning I've drifted farther, though based on the rich color of the cliffs, not quite far enough to be clear of the burn. Damn. Guess I'll pass out for a bit longer. Sleep off this rampant thump in my head. Hopefully wake up closer to the wall. I let my heavy lids fall shut.
Gavtuina! Teolach Actinva!
The coarse words echoed through the gorge, nudging me.
Hagnida! Hagni!
That's no language I've ever heard. Should probably inspect. I lift my head, turn it, then settle my left cheek on the trunk and pry my eyes open. A large shape is running along the thin shore, trying to keep pace with me. A male, I think. Pretty sure he can't reach me from there, which is good. I'm too tired for stops. Hi. Bye. I close my eyes again. My log comes to an abrupt halt, jostling me so hard I almost roll off. I groan, opening my eyes to see I've snagged on a collection of debris, my trunk still banging and bumping into place amongst a pile of uptorn trees. The blurred figure draws closer, yelling more words I don't understand. But I don't think he's yelling at me, his head facing another direction, though he continues to point my way. Cold dread slips through my veins, something innate telling me I need to get up. Now. I lift one weighty arm off the log, then the other, and immediately plunge beneath the water, wrestled by its churning might, realizing my mistake when I lack the energy to kick or flounder to the surface. My lungs rebel, battling for breath, sucking a wad of water that feels so heavy and wrong. There's a splash, bubbles exploding, hands gripping me. I'm lugged skyward, hauled toward the bank and torn from the water, up over the shore's sharp lip before I'm dumped on the ground so hard any moisture I sucked down is quickly expelled in a retching heave. Muddy water splatters, not discriminating between my sodden hair and the dirt I'm aiming for, air rasping into my heaving lungs between chest-cracking coughs. My gut and chest continue to convulse in staggered synchrony as I nip squinted glances at my company between the violent upheavals. The male is huge and muscular with yellow sunburst eyes, garbed in leather pants that hang off his trim hips. He's littered with pale scars, bearing long red hair adorned with coils of copper thread. The leather strap braced across his chest is laden with an array of finely crafted weapons, dragon scale blades and bronze ones in the shape of lanky petals, akin to the one Khan had. There's also a hook-type tool similar to the one I saw being used to pull that ale up from beneath the ice south of the wall. What have I gotten myself into now? The male lowers, his massive scarred hand coming down to point at my iron cuff.
Gwildna,
he asks, and I shake my head, figuring he must be asking about the evidence of my past imprisonment.
Just ornamental,
I burp out, chased by another splatter of spew.
Isn't it, wretch, pretty?
Definitely wouldn't want him to think that I'm an escaped prisoner who barely avoided getting ripped apart by a thunder of molten maws. I might end up back there again. The male turns, yelling more unfamiliar words to another in the distance, the latter standing on the shore's severe lip, hacking storm debris from a damaged fishing net. I'm so busy heaving half my guts on the ground that it takes me too long to notice the markings on the back of the male closest to me. A dotted tattoo of some kind of bird, wings stretched around his ribs as though hugging him from behind. I frown. Wretch. Continue frowning. It reminds me of the dots that make up Khan's tattoo. Realization flays me through the chest, another surge of water gushing up my throat, splashing on the ground. Warriors of the Boltanic Plains. This might be where Khan spent his adolescence. My nausea instantly abates, and I curse, using the back of my arm to wipe my trembling lips. More yelling in that language I don't recognize, the other male now running toward us. The one closest grabs my arm and helps me to my knees. There are many clans scattered across this chapped and grainy wasteland no others have the tenacity to carve out a living on, and I seem to have drifted right into the clutches of two such folk,
their way of life even more mysterious than those who reside near the Burns capital. But I do know one thing. These clans produce warriors with unmatched abilities. Think I'll give this place a miss. The male before me drops to one knee, his ruddy beard concealing half his tan, freckle-dusted face, his sharp stare cutting across my features. He reaches forward and lifts a coil of my sodden hair.
Achtende. Kolu, perhaps?
He says, pointing at the long, vomit-drenched tendril coiled in his palm, looking back at the other male who's now drawing close, the latter shrugging.
She's come a river acht, eh?
I gather my hair and push his hand away. His brow bunches, and he grabs me by the shoulders, helping me to my feet. The moment I plant them on the ground, I lurch from his grip, backstepping, lifting a hand to cradle my throbbing temple.
Acht etin el?
The male asks, gesturing to me. I don't understand. He touches his hand to his temple, to the same spot where mine's throbbing, his next words presented so slowly it's obvious he's trying to help me comprehend.
Serva iten agavin?
Is he asking how I hit my head?
I fell off a cliff.
His frown deepens, and he murmurs something to the male beside him. More of those words I don't understand. I can tell by the glances nipping my way and by their general body language that they're discussing how to get me from here to somewhere else. I don't want to find out where that is, nor do I want to find out what they want to do with me there. I've got a headache. The last thing I feel like doing is breaking necks. Unless it's Rex, of course.
Well, it's been grand, but I've got a tree to catch, I say,
jerking my thumb toward the rushing river that looks nothing like it did the previous cycle, now so orange and full of debris, no doubt torn up from the abated storm. Unfortunately, it's nowhere near as tranquil and inviting. Not that it'll stop me from leaping into it the moment another log bobs by. The males pass each other stares of uncertainty, speaking in those foreign words again before they advance as one, almost stepping through my puddle of half-digested soup. The determined hardness in their eyes stiffens my spine. Shit. Looks like I'm not waiting for another log after all. I spin, about to leap into the gushing river when a blur of motion catches my eye, drawing my attention to the cliff on the opposite side. A piece of rock displaces, plummeting before thumping against the riverbank below. I wouldn't think it strange were it not for the claw marks also scoring down the cliff, like something invisible is climbing it. I frown. How hard did I hit my head?
Yaha too.
I glance back to see both males staring wide-eyed across the river, their complexions turning so pale their freckles stand out in stark difference. Maybe I'm not seeing things. There's a shrill yowling sound, and I whip my head around, seeing a huge metallic smudge now perched on the opposite bank, contrasting the stone's warm tones. What's going on? I murmur, ready to leap into the river and never learn the answer to this particular riddle. The shape sharpens, becoming a fluffy silver beast that looks like it could swallow me in two mouthfuls. Twin metallic sabers protruding from either side of its upper jaw, so long they reach well past its chin. Big, pale eyes stare at me, unblinking, slit through with a line of slate that contracts and tightens. Contracts and tightens. Like it's imagining what I'd taste like lanced through by its munching maw.
Fetata!
One of the males behind me yells, pointing past, as if I can't already see the enormous creature perched over the other side of the river, certainly large enough to stomach all three of us. I really hope that thing can't... It leaps. My heart drops. For a moment, all I see is this massive creature flying through the air, claws outstretched like it's reaching for me, lips peeled back from its bared teeth.
until one of the males grabs my arm and yanks me backward. I fall into a pile of limbs, a heavy thud telling me the creature has landed on our side of the shore. Fuck. I scramble to get up again. Get away. Finally making it to my feet, I whip around, finding the animal between us and the river. It oscillates between an argent haze of barely there shape and a strong, sturdy feline with a tufted tail and flowing mane that tangles with the wind, like the tendrils are dancing with Claude. My heart leaps into my throat as it lowers onto its thick, powerful haunches, the piercing tips of its sabers almost scoring across the ground. It looks me right in the eye, lifts its upper lip, and snarls. I sigh. I survived a thunder of molten maws and nearly choked to death on saberside saliva only to be eaten by this thing?
Fetata gadana,
one of the males beside me says, the tone of his voice laced with a tinge of wonder.
Fetata. Fetata kama firkolu.
Fetata? What the fu- My eyes widen, heart skipping a beat. Fate herder. It's the fucking fate herder. The creature is more legend than reality, so rarely spotted in the flesh. Those who have seen it are often considered crazy or delusional, boasting stories about the beast nudging them to make a different decision from the one they'd intended. Physically nudging them, like a bossy handler. The creature's slit pupils swell, its large flat tongue coming out to lick across its muzzle, as though in confirmation of the revelation. My shoulders loosen, some of the tension leaving my body. Surely this thing doesn't go around eating folk. Surely. Flicking a glance behind me, I wonder which of the two males the creature's here to herd. My heart stilling when I find them both on their knees, looking at me with reverence. Certainly not like I just heaved my guts all over myself in front of them. Weird. I'll just move out of your way, I say, holding the herder's jarring glare as I step to the right. It prowls sideways, keeping itself firmly positioned between myself and the river, a low growl boiling in its fluffy chest. I frown, passing a glance over my shoulder at the others, certain they must have also moved. My heart plopping into my stomach when I see them still in the same place, looking at me with raised brows. You've got to be kidding me. No, not happening. Narrowing my eyes on the creature, I shift my weight like I'm about to leap to the left, then throw myself right and sprint along the bank as fast as my legs can take me, curving toward the river. A snarl cuts through the air a split moment before something big and dense charges into my side, knocking me off my feet. I careen along the ground, certain flesh is grating off my shoulder as I grind to a halt in the dirt. Groaning, I lift onto my grazed elbows so I can look right into the slit eyes of the creature now doing slow, prowling arcs between me and the fucking river. No! It growls, the sound like a sawtooth slice. Maybe it does go around eating folk. I want to go that way, I say, pointing in the direction the water is flowing. The fate herder begins tightening its arcs in loping strides, crushing the space between us, its message blatant. Get the fuck up. This is a heap of spangle shit, I mutter, pushing to a stand. It continues to move in sweeping arcs, pushing closer with each prowled step. I walk backward, keeping my eyes mostly on the animal, though passing the odd glance over my shoulder. It doesn't take me long to realize where it's hurting me. Toward the warriors. I stop, widen my stance, and narrow my eyes on the beast. I am not going with them, I say, pointing at the males. It roars, baring a maw full of honed teeth,
its breath buffeting me with such force I have to squint. The sound bounces off the canyon's sheer walls like an echoing volley. Maybe I am going with them after all. Groaning, I tip my face to the sky and close my eyes, dragging my fingers through my wet, tangled hair. All I want to do is slit Rek'Zaros' throat. Is that too much to ask? Fuck! My curse bounces off the walls, hitting me over and over. Pretty sure going to war with this thing wouldn't end well, and I can't hunt Rek if I'm dead. Dropping into icy resignation, I spin and charge toward the warriors, cutting a few sharp glances at the creature now prowling close enough to my heels that it could snap at them if it wanted to. Reaching the two males, I stop, throwing my hands up in a show of displeasure. Let's get this over with, whatever this is. Try anything questionable and I'll gut you both with my nails. Frowning, they stare at me for a long while, pass some words between themselves, then dip their heads at me, almost like a sign of respect. They do the same to the creature at my back, then gesture toward a path that clefts through the sheer, rust-colored cliff on this side of the river.
Kama, Kolu.
They gesture me forward.
Kama.
No idea about the other word, but Kama must mean come. Truly, honestly, the last thing I want to do. I cut my majestic, mythical beast another scathing look. Unless Rek'Zaros is up that path, nice and cornered for me to slaughter, I'm going to be pissed. Just so you know. The Fate Herder licks its chops, steps closer, and nudges me forward with its big, fluffy head. Muttering beneath my breath, I trail the warriors, pausing at the base of a stone staircase cut into the cliff, casting a forlorn look at the river. One step closer, sideswipe to the head. The Fate Herder growls, and I growl back, baring my teeth at the beast. Stop being so bossy, I gripe, charging up the stairs, chased by the sound of its great paws patting on the stone behind me. You won. Rave. Chapter 39. The pathway is like a